Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. Purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right front and center to face the music and dance together to address problems rather than defend positions. Well, when Bruce Lipton and I published Spontaneous Evolution in 2009, Barack Obama had just been elected President of the United States. In our first hardback edition of the book, we celebrated the election as a sign of a great evolutionary uprising, indicating that the majority of Americans prefer living into the "we're all in this together" meme as opposed to the "every man for himself, dominate or be dominated" paradigm. And while I still suspect that most of us would rather live by the golden rule than the rule of gold, the neoliberalism of the Obama administration and the Democrats has shown itself to not be the vehicle that's going to take us there. A dozen years after the heady celebration of Obama's election, the body politic is locked in a mutually destructive battle to the death that will ensure that whoever wins the election, the American people are likely to lose. So how did we get here? And now that we are in this war of the worlds, what now? Can we agree on an agreed upon reality? Can we call forth a sane and sacred center to lead us from the middle? Well, our guest on Wiki Politiki this week is Canadian-based journalist Guy Crittenden, who recently posted a piece that caught my eye and attention, an open letter to Bill Gates that calls out the technological fix that will further destroy the natural world. Guy enjoyed a career as an environmental journalist and magazine editor for 25 years. He won 14 Kenneth R. Wilson Awards for excellence in business journalism, and he was twice a finalist at the National Magazine Awards. However, over New Year's 2013-2014, he embarked on a life-changing trip to Peru, after which he became a full-time freelance researcher and writer focusing on environmental and consciousness shift themes and geopolitics. His book, The Year of Drinking Magic, 12 Ceremonies with the Vine of Souls, won the silver medal at the 2018 Independent Book Publisher Awards. These days, Crittenden is focused on writing about the impending fourth industrial revolution, we'll talk about that, and the global reset agenda of the World Economic Forum and related international bodies. He leads a group called the Rainbow Warriors that develops pamphlet material and street theater ideas to protest what its members see as a global corporate coup d'etat. Well, can't wait to get into this discussion. Welcome, Guy.
Hello, Steve. And you've already accomplished what is obviously the most important thing in this entire radio interview, which is you pronounced my name correctly.
I did. You mean people can't pronounce Guy?
Being that I'm from Canada, they'll usually call me Guy, and then they'll butcher Crittenden many different ways. So I was very pleased to see that you got that. Thank you.
Well, my name has been butchered too, both Beyondananda and Behrman. So I'm very sensitive to pronunciation, and I'm glad that we're on the right foot here. Well, you know, as I said, you came on my radar a couple of weeks ago because of a post you did called An Open Letter to Bill Gates, and that's why I found out about you. But I want you to tell our listeners a bit about how did that piece come about, the key points that you were making, and the response that it's gotten.
Well, up until February, March, April of this year, my writing was very much concentrated on consciousness shift themes. So, you know, I'm a student. I can tell from your comedy name with the word Ananda in it that you have some familiarity with yogic philosophy. So I'd been studying different forms of Buddhist and yogic thoughts, and I sort of a number of years ago left behind my my career editing environmental business magazines. So I was very much focused on that. But over the past 6 or 7 years, I've also been doing a lot of heavy research on geopolitics. And I really didn't know why I was so focused on it, but I was. And but for the past 6 or 7 years, since I came back from my Peru trip, I was very much looking at the world and educating myself through the lens of what we might call Naomi Klein's concept of disaster capitalism. So I was very much sort of bringing myself up to speed on the real reasons why the Vietnam and Korean wars occurred, the real reasons why the U.S. and its NATO countries have been attacking Muslim countries around the world. But then, even despite all that heavy research and writing, and I spent 8 months just researching an article on the dirty war on Syria that I had to publish on my own website because no one else would publish it. It was too controversial. That one was called A Tale of Two Flags, and it was about, you know, the different sides of that conflict. Anyway, long story short, what happened was, as I started researching the biological crisis that we're allegedly in, I stumbled upon a whole new area of research and knowledge that came as a bit of a surprise to me. And that was what I call the rise of the biosecurity state. Not my term, by the way, but the rise of the biosecurity state is what we're dealing with here. We'll get into that later, I'm sure. And so my research started to shift, and over time, against every fiber in my body that wanted this to not be true, I came to the conclusion reluctantly that there is a plan that exists. It is Bill Gates is fronting that plan right now, along with Fauci and some others. But it's a plan that's been in development, well, at least since the 1970s, we could say probably since the 1930s with the technocrats and the purveyors of the idea of a technocracy. So anyway, it's a long-winded answer to your question, but basically I decided one day, I just got inspired. I'd been writing about these things from different angles, and I sort of thought, what if I just write a letter to Bill Gates, dear Bill Gates, or dear Bill and Melinda Gates? And I wrote it in a very polite tone, which is always, when you really want to get the knife, and it's best to be very polite. A lot of people love to raise their voice and scream or yell profanities. But if you can just maintain a polite tone, but make your points, then it can be very effective. So I think that's why I think you might have liked that article, because it was very polite. It was a letter to Bill Gates, but it just excoriated him. It reviewed all the salient things that we're living through right now that he and his friends are perpetrating on the human population. So it had quite a bit of irony in it.
Well, we're going to catch up on all that in a little bit, but I want to go backward a little bit because I'm always interested in how people come to their calling. You obviously had an earlier calling, and that was at an environmental journalist. You won awards. Tell us about a little bit about how, you know, what motivated you to get into that field, a little bit about the work that you did, and then what transformational experience changed your life and direction?
Yeah, so I did my degree at U of T. I was an English major. I got accepted to do graduate work, but I ended up not doing that. I had a career in my 20s for a while as an artist, and then I went and traveled. That's not particularly relevant here, but I guess I became a worldly kind of person. And then in my late 20s, a friend of mine who'd been a best friend of mine since childhood called me up and said, took me out for coffee and said, look, we're starting a magazine business, me and a couple of friends. We want to show you what we're doing and see if it interests you. So I went over to their place. It was literally a business launched on a kitchen table back in 1989. And over the next couple of years, I joined with the group. This guy had been a childhood friend. And I also knew something about the environmental services industry because his dad had published magazines in that space in the United States for many years. So I grew up knowing about that. And I come from a family of journalists. My parents and step-parents all worked for newspapers. So I had that media background, and I had a bit of awareness of the importance of environmental issues. But I don't want to idealize what I did. I essentially saw it as a business opportunity, and I put up a little money to buy shares in the startup. And anyway, we went on and became quite successful. We had a magazine on recycling, and we had another magazine on pollution control. And it was when I was doing that work that I discovered for want of a better term, corporate capture, which Robert Kennedy Jr. talks about a lot. It was where I first encountered regulatory agencies that had been captured by corporate agendas. And so over time, I grew to understand that pollution and externalities were not being handled properly in the economy. I also was very disappointed to learn, because when I went into it, I thought of the government and the regulators and the people at the Ministry of Environment, what in the States would be the
EPA, perhaps.
EPA, yeah. I always thought of those as the guys in the white hats, you know, the good guys. But what I realized over time is that they were usually, almost always complicit. And what I saw they would do is they would get in league with businesses. They would rubber stamp their approvals and certificates of approval. And then if the company got in trouble and took heat for pollution, then sometimes the regulator would throw the company under the bus to make an example of them, but it wasn't really sincere. So over time, I became extremely aware of the depth of the corruption and the unhealthy confluence of interest between business elites and government agencies. Recycling is a good example. Recycling is a useful tool in the environmental management toolbox, but it became a panacea because people were asking the wrong question. So back in the early 90s, we should have been saying, what would a sustainable society look like? And then how does recycling fit into that? But instead, and this was very much because of corporate agendas that wanted to keep producing plastic packaging and so on, they ask a different question. They just ask, how can we divert more material from disposal, you know, from landfill and incineration? And that gave birth to this whole recycling empire, and these recycling municipal officials were building empires, and billions of dollars were spent of taxpayers' money cleaning up the waste of industry. And the worst thing is it allowed industry to stay with its status quo packaging. It allowed it to continue to put out plastic pop bottles and things like that. So that's just one example that's relatable to most people, that they could see with their own eyes that, and this, you'll see the reason I'm mentioning this, it will be obvious in a minute. It's so important to ask the right question and to recognize that government and industry will collude from time to time in creating narratives to paper over what are really the advancement of corporate profits at the expense of the common good, and in fact, at the expense of the commons itself.
Good. Okay, well, we are right about to take our first break in just a very short while. We're going to be back with Guy Crittenden. We're going to be talking about a more nuanced view of the environmentalist movement. When we get back after these messages, we're on Wiki Politiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
A social distancing tip.
While the CDC urges you to avoid close contact, like hugging or shaking hands, there are other non-physical ways to say hello. Wave, wink, use sign language, salute, smile, give the peace sign, throw up an air high five, do jazz hands. Remember, stay a minimum of 6 feet or 2 arms length away from others, and stay home if you can. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Well, hi, Steve Behrman back on Wiki Politiki Radio with Guy Crittenden. We were just about to talk about his first noticing the illusionment, because again, one of the key causes of disillusionment is illusionment, the illusionment of the environmental movement. And then obviously the thing that flipped the switch was your trip to Peru. So let's begin with the trip to Peru, and then what followed that? What happened, and then what followed?
Sure, I'll tell you that. I can't let this pass, though, that I listened to the commercial during the break, and that phrase from the public service announcement of "we're all alone in this together." I mean, how Orwellian is that? Oh, man. Anyway,
I cringe when I hear it too. By the way, I cringe. It's on every week. I cringe when I hear it because I think there's a lot more to the story than that. So maybe you'll be doing a real public service by amplifying the real view. So anyway, thanks for mentioning.
You bet. Okay, so the Peru story I can give you quite quickly. I'd been in the environmental services industry for 25 years. I was kind of in Canada, the journalist of record in that space, if that doesn't sound pretentious. And then, I've been doing it for 25 years, and I thought, geez, I'm spending a lot of time writing about the environment, but I'm not spending a lot of time in it. And the Amazon is, of course, the mecca for environmentalists. So I decided I would go on a trip by myself to Peru and do that. And I'd also met someone who drank the shamanic visionary brew ayahuasca, and I had been curious to try that myself. I knew I had some inner work to do, and I'd been a sort of meditator and a Buddhist for quite a while. I won't say that my meditation practice was anything to brag about. But so I went there and I drank ayahuasca 3 times after. First we trekked the jungle for a week, and then we went to the Nahu Riau Spiritual Center, and we had, during the course of a week, we drank 3 times. I popped really big with that medicine. I had a lot of profound visionary experience, received a lot of teachings. My whole reality shifted, and I would say one of my main takeaways from that experience was I was shown how I manifest something that the First Nations people call the white man's wetiko, And the Wetiko, as you probably know, is the kind of narcissism and arrogance of the colonial settler mentality. It's that sort of arrogance that where, you know, Europeans would come to, say, North America, and they'd plant a flag in the beach and claim it for their own, and then they go around and survey the land and divvy it up into lots and sell them and say, gee, how much money can we make off of this parcel of land, which is an extractive attitude, which was, at, as you know, a great variance to the attitude of the First Nations people. I don't want to idealize them, but they did, to some extent, live in harmony with nature. So I was shown this, and when I came back, my reality had changed so much that I realized I had to make big changes. I had to leave my job. I couldn't just be in the corporate world serving those priorities anymore. And so I became a freelance writer, and I went on to write a book about my experiences with Amazonian teacher plants that you referred to earlier. And as I said, for reasons I couldn't quite understand, I became very obsessed with geopolitics. And now I realize why, because in a sense, I was preparing myself, and maybe you could, we could say the universe was preparing me for my role in this world, which seems to be that I'm very well suited and prepared to write about and raise awareness of the coming surveillance capitalism, the coming technocracy. Normally, I don't like to talk much about my own bio, but you can see from what I've said that I have the experience being a magazine editor of taking complex technical information written by engineers and lawyers and translating it into articles that are a lively read that people can understand and actually enjoy. So that's a good background there. And then plus my experience with the teacher plants and the Amazon dialed me into that kind of spiritual dimension, if you will, of what we're going through right now, because there certainly is a kind of a spiritual dimension to it, for sure.
You know, you mentioned something prior to the show. You talked about working on a piece on bifurcation. And what seems to be the case right now, more than any time in my lifetime, is it's not just different points of view. It's not just different narratives. It's different realities. And it seems like each group, whether it's the left or the right, is getting its information from a particular pipeline. And the information is very specifically geared toward each of these groups. And my sense is that there is an intentional separation of people into tribes so that they don't really gather together and compare notes. I want to get your perspective on that. And, you know, do you find that there, you know, for example, there's the Republican in our country, the conservative narrative that, well, the masks aren't doing any good. They're useless. The lockdown is useless. There are better ways of dealing with the pandemic. And yet they're bundled with a lot of other toxic, racist, kind of frightening ideas. And people, I think people find it hard to go to kind of pick and choose in a narrative, and they feel compelled to either buy this one or that one. So I know it's a meandering question. I can only expect a meandering answer. What about the bifurcation? Is it artificially created? Speak about that.
Yeah, I wrote this article called The Great Bifurcation, which people can find on my website. If you don't mind, I'll just mention that the website is called hypnosis.co. It's not a .com, it's a .co. But hypnosis is spelled, the gnosis part is G-N-O-S-I-S, so like sacred knowledge. So it's like hip, sacred knowledge. Anyway, I wrote the article there.
And by the way, just to interrupt for just a second, we have the link on my WikiPolitiki site when it's posted. The link to that is there.
Okay, so no more shameless self-promotion.
No, it's okay to do that. We encourage that. We have no shame. Go ahead.
Well, I am shame. So the I wrote this article. It's amazing. I've got calls from people in South America wanting to translate it into Spanish. I even got a message from a gentleman in sub-Saharan Africa saying it was really helping trigger the conversation that was needed in his community. So it's truly a global phenomenon that's going on. In that article, I look at the reasons why society is splitting primarily into two groups. The mask wearers, we could just call, you know, I know that's painting with a very broad brush. And the people who don't wear masks, that's a little oversimplified. But really, to get drill specifically into your meandering question, I would say that what I see happening is propaganda, both government and corporate propaganda. Now back, and it's propaganda has become very sophisticated. You know, think back to the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and the wars. You know, the propaganda used to be very ham-fisted. You know, loose lips sink ships, and there'd be one message for the whole society. You know, we must fear the Hun and this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, serve your king. Because the society was, you could assume it was white, Christian, uniform, and everyone was singing more or less from the same song sheet. Nowadays, they devise the propaganda for, they into many different segments. So, for example, and I mean, some of this goes back to Karl Rove's work that he did for the Bush presidency in identifying very discrete audiences and voting audiences. So this has been embraced by corporate America and the globalists. And so what they'll do is they'll say, okay, we need to get that sort of, we need to craft a message that will speak to the person who would normally vote Republican, would be inclined to support Hillary Clinton, probably likes avocado toast or whatever, however they profile people. And they'll have a message crafted for that person. They'll have a totally different message crafted for the Republican type that you referred to, who realizes that there's deception in the COVID narrative, but may have some insensitivity to things that Democrat supporter would have. So I think that there's literally dozens of narratives out there. There's two major ones, and then it evolves very quickly there into different narratives. Now, in Canada, where I'm speaking from, I'm up here, just north of Toronto here, we have a lot of the same issues that you have in the United States and other countries, because this is a truly international, globalist coup d'etat that's occurring. We're enduring what has been called, I think correctly, the controlled demolition of the world economy. And we're seeing the economy being taken over by not only the U.S. Fed, but all the world banks working together. And COVID, whether it was man-made or not, whether it was released deliberately or not, is providing a fig leaf for that. Now, in Canada, we have a number of resistance groups that have risen up. They're all peaceful. They're all pacifist-type movements. There is one group that is fighting for gun rights, but they're not violent. And so my group's Rainbow Warriors, but there's The Line, there's True North Patriots, there's Glorious and Free. There's a whole bunch of them, and we do, you know, Saturday protests, and we also do Zoom calls, and we share articles and things. And what I've noticed from those groups is that they're pointed in the right direction. They know that we need to end the lockdown that's causing so much damage, and we need to raise awareness about the fact that COVID-19 is actually a very mild virus, and that it has never been identified with Koch's postulates. So therefore, the contact tracing schemes that are going are really just unscientific PCR tests that are being conducted to drive the numbers and the fear narrative by claiming that a lot of people are infected, when in fact they're not. First of all, they're not sick, and in most cases what's being detected is their own viral debris and not anything like people imagine a dangerous virus to be. But that said, those are all great things to think about, but what I think is missing in the conversation, and this is why I was so excited to be invited on your show today, is that while those are near short and near term priorities, there's a much bigger story here. And it's a story that I've got onto, and it is a story that finds support among most of the world's finest, truly independent journalists, people who are not on the payroll of the CNNs and the New York Times of the world. These are truly independent journalists like Whitney Webb, Canada's Corey Morningstar, and fabulous researchers like Alison McDowell. And what that story is what I want to turn our attention to now, which is the global reset and the plans of the World Economic Forum and the United Nations. And the, as I said earlier, the rise of the biosecurity state.
Good. I think that this is really important. Now, of course, to some of the progressives I know who are friends of mine, everything that you said in regards to that, well, that sounds like some you know, paranoid conspiracy theory. I mean, I'm sure you get that kind of pushback as well. And yet you're saying that this is something, there are certain things that the independent journalists agree on. I want to. Would you include Naomi Wolf in that as well, or is she still she's still not totally admitting this sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know exactly where. Like, I haven't looked specifically.
Getting my Naomi's mixed. I may have the wrong Naomi, but you know what I'm talking about.
Well, it's interesting
Klein,
because both
Klein.
Naomi Klein and Naomi Wolf have weighed in on what was the salient issue up until 8 months ago, that being the war on terror and disaster capitalism. And as you know, Naomi Wolf had her very good 10 steps that she'd identified toward fascism, and she had recently put out a video in which it's clear that we're now entering stage 10 of out of 10. those voices are great. And I used to, for instance, and I still read people, like I watch the Jimmy Dore show regularly
sure.
on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I love the Australian blogger, Caitlin Johnstone.
Sure.
However, what is true of all of those people is I think they've failed to pick up on the latest development. In other words, I view them as very competent, but they're kind of like chateau generals in World War I who are up in the castles, moving the icons on big maps. Meanwhile, it's the people down in the trenches who are being forced to get on horses and ride up against machine guns and tanks. In other words, generals always fight the last war, and a lot of journalists, even some of the best intellectuals today, have not, they're still in the disaster capitalism mode, and they have not taken the step into understanding surveillance capitalism, which there's a wonderful book, I haven't read the book, but I've seen her interviewed about it, Professor Shoshana Zuboff. Has
from,
a book
from Harvard Business School, no less. Yes, I've seen it.
People want to read a fat book or they can watch a short video, but you got to look up Shoshana Zuboff and wrap your head around surveillance capitalism. So she's done a great job explaining that. And then another person I've encountered is a woman, Canadian journalist and researcher by the name of Corey Morningstar, who wrote a series of articles that she then brought together in a book called The Manufacturing of Greta Thunberg. Now, some of your progressive audience are going to really be upset by what I'm about to say, but what Corey Morningstar found was that there was nothing organic or spontaneous about the phenomenon of Greta Thunberg's rise to fame. It was very much a campaign that had been carefully created and packaged. And what Corey Morningstar figured out is that the environmental movement has been hijacked and is now being used for a purpose that has more to do with enriching elites and mega projects and kickbacks to, be it wealthy people, corporations, or corrupt governments, you know, everything from nuclear power plants to enormous liquid natural gas terminals and this kind of thing. And so she's been great on that. And then the other person who has really educated me, and I cannot say enough good things about her research, is a woman researcher. She's American. Her name is Allison McDowell, McDowell. And she has a blog called Wrench in the Gears, Wrench in the Gears. And she talks about biocapitalism. And what the way she got into this is she was researching the rise of private schools and charter schools, and she's kind of a defender of the public school system, although she was also looking into problems with that. And as she was researching education topics, she stumbled into the same stuff I've stumbled into and that Cory Morningstar stumbled into and Professor Zuboff stumbled into, which is all this biocapitalism stuff. And Allison McDowell has probably done the best job of anybody in explaining how we are moving, being shifted into a casino economy with a bunch of terms that are going to be new for some of your listeners, like geofencing, human capital bonds, a game and token economy. I'm very happy to explain a bit of this.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, and then we're going to come back to you and talk more about biocapitalism and the hijacking of the environmental movement. The truth shall upset you free. We'll see you in just a short bit back on WikiPolitiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay. 911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Well, hi, this is Steve Badman. We're back on WikiPolitiki with Guy Crittenden. I've got about 20 more questions to ask, but I think I'm going to boil it down to just a couple of questions. And that is, briefly, you know, what is this new reset plan, Fourth Industrial Revolution, Global Reset, and what can we do about it? We have about 15 minutes to cover those issues, and I'll have to have you back on the show in a while to really lay this out. But give us your views on that.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, and this is actually what I love this opportunity, and I'm very grateful for it, because this is what I see my role as. There's no point in my going and reinventing the wheel by duplicating the research that Allison McDowell or Whitney Webb or others have done. By the way, I had to mention Whitney Webb. She was interviewed by Jimmy Dore on the Jimmy Dore Show, and people should check that interview out. because she talks in that interview about secret documents she acquired through a FOIA Freedom of Information request, in which she discovered that Silicon Valley executives had been secretly meeting with representatives from the U.S. Security and surveillance state, and coming up with how in the United States to implement the plans of the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab's concept of the Great Reset. So where to begin? Well, first of all, there's a thing called technocracy, and technocracy came out of this sort of eugenicist movement and the Fabian Society, Oxford School set of obsessions about perfecting the human race. And a lot of us thought that all that stuff went away after World War II, because after all, was it ever trying to create a master race, and didn't we kill 6 million Jews? And when we killed Hitler, if we killed Hitler, didn't we end that? Well, it turns out that unfortunately, no. While the rest of society moved on and created something more like liberal democracy after World War II, at least in the first developed world, what was happening was David Rockefeller and some other people back in the 70s were dusting off those old technocracy studies, documents, and plans, and reviving them. Now, here's where things get really tricky, and this is very frustrating for me. You referred earlier to propaganda and the problem that some people will view any explanation of these plans as a conspiracy theory. And I don't blame people. I mean, it is so fantastical that I myself have to check my own confirmation bias all the time. And I want to add that this is the first time in my life I really want to be wrong about something. The best possible outcome of all of this is a year from now, you call me up and say, Guy, I'm so embarrassed. None of what you said was going to happen happened. This is terrible. Because I don't want to be right about this. However, I have empirical reason to think that I am. So what they ended up doing is they, over the past 30, 40, 50 years, they dusted off those old eugenicist plans and they rebranded them. And this is going to sound really strange, but again, I edited environmental journals for 25 years, so I do have a depth in this. They rebranded them with all the terminology of sustainable development. So I'm dead-ended right away. I am checkmated. Because if I come out as a journalist and say, well, I got to tell you, we got to look very carefully into all of the sustainable development plans because they actually doublespeak for a eugenicist agenda, I'm going to be attacked by the environmentalists, I'm going to be attacked by the progressives, I'm going to be attacked by the left. This is what they've done in every area. They'll take, for instance, the issue of race, a very legitimate racial issues and grievances against racist police in the States and all that. But the globalists have taken that and they've weaponized it. And we have, we have globalists giving money to Antifa and trying to turn the protests violent. We have other groups, for instance, who subscribe to, say, the QAnon narrative, which I don't really support. But I don't dispute that there's elite pedophile networks. We know that to be for sure. But here's again where we get where we're in a predicament, because if we say, oh, we got to end the child trafficking, the globalists will respond and say, oh, yeah, well, we have a solution for that. We're going to chip everybody. We've got ID 2020, and we're going to get all these kids out of danger because everyone is going to have a sovereign digital identity around the world. So this is what I'm trying to say, and I'm kind of butchering it, is that it's very difficult to even talk about this subject because the people who've designed this plan have anticipated every objection and have created terminology that sounds positive. And And so when you criticize the plan, it sounds like you're being mean-spirited, and it sounds like you're dumping on something good. Another example, say the UN and World Economic Forum literature talks about having equal outcomes for everyone, no person left behind. In other words, poor people in developing countries are entitled to the same health outcomes that we have in the developed industrialized world. Sounds great, right? Except what that really means is full vaccination for everybody. And I don't even care what you think about vaccines. We were talking about there are hundreds of vaccines under development right now, and this is a way for Big Pharma to get the entire global population fully vaccinated with every vaccine and every booster shot. And what's concerning is that this will be imposed through something called geofencing. So it won't just be, oh, well, the vaccine isn't mandatory. It'll be coercive. You want to get on a plane, you want to get on a train, you're going to have to show your COVID pass on your cell phone, and it's going to have a green light. Okay, I don't want to just ramble, but I do have something else to say. But before I do, you jump in if any of that triggered a question for you.
I think that this, you're right on track. And of course, you know, this is new to most people. You know, the Greta Thunberg thing, I mean, this is something I heard a year ago. And it reminds me of something that happened 100 years ago in this country, in the U.S. 100 years ago, it was revealed that the Chicago White Sox intentionally lost the 1919 World Series, and they got paid by gamblers to do it. And there's a classic thing that may have happened or may not have happened, where Shoeless Joe Jackson, who was the big star of the White Sox, was approached by this young boy who tugged at his shirt and said, "Say it ain't so, Joe. Say it ain't so, Joe." And so here we have, "Say it ain't so, Greta. Say it ain't so, Greta." You know, all of this sounds like the Truman Show. You know, it sounds like that there is a manufactured reality that is piped into us through electronic media. You know, and it sounds like science fiction, but unfortunately, it also sounds like it's science fact. So continue with that, and then I'll let you know when we got about 3 minutes left, and then we're going to talk about how people can, in addition to just waking up and wising up, how people can get involved in having that conversation next year where you said, wow, it didn't happen. Okay?
right. Well, okay, I'm just going to review a few concepts. And frankly, often I find myself editing my thoughts because I think some things I might say might be too fantastical for people. I'm just not going to do that. I want everyone listening to know that I don't care if you think I'm crazy. I'm just going to tell you how this works to the degree that I understand it, and then you can go and do your own research and make up your own mind. But I think you will find that what I'm saying is at least food for thought. So what is being implemented is called the global or the Great Reset or the Global Reset. Klaus Schwab has a book about this called COVID-19 and the Great Reset, and you can buy that on Amazon, or you can download it as a PDF for free. And normally I don't encourage that, but in this case, I'd rather people didn't give their money to these people. But you can read about it there. There's also the World Economic Forum has a massive website. They have other things, but there's a special site you got to find, and it looks like COVID virus. It's round, and it has all these text going on the outside that look like the little things that stick out of a virus. And that site, you could spend 2 years reading. It's got thousands and thousands of web pages on it, and it lays out the entire plan in exhaustive detail. So anybody who thinks that this is just being made up and it's a conspiracy theory, I got to tell you, nobody would have put the effort that these people put into that website laying out their plan unless they were serious. So what is the plan? The plan is, well, I'll start with this. The plan begins with, and they actually said that they would introduce a virus and that a health emergency would create the chaos necessary to collapse the global economy and reorganize everything. So I'm just going to riff for a moment on what the macro goal is, and I'm going to mention the thing that nobody likes to hear about depopulation. So 2020 was a big year, 2021 is a big year, 2025, 2030, and 2050. Those are all big years in the World Economic Forum plan. Please understand that the World Economic Forum is in league with an alphabet soup of other agencies and NGOs implementing all this on behalf of the world's 1% of the 1%. So other organizations include the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, the United Nations, various agencies of the United Nations, the World Bank, and so on. So by 2050, let's go right to the end game. What's the plan? The vision is that by 2050, there will be around 500 million people in the world. These people will be herded into mega cities. These are called strengthened cities or strong cities in the literature. They want most of the planet depopulated of human beings. They want fully a third of the world to have no people in it, which means because they want nature to regenerate. And I'm in favor of nature regenerating, but I'm concerned about the fact that the world's indigenous peoples are about to be pushed off their land. That doesn't feel right to me. And I don't know how we get from over 7 billion people down to 500 million people by 2050, unless they're planning mass sterilization or starvation or what. So I'm not going to dwell on that, and I find that that's too much for people to observe, to accept, that I have to say it. Now, between now and then, I also now want to shift to describing biocapitalism and how that works. So, and I'll just make it real quick, and then you can ask me questions, because I could go on at length about it. Really what it is an economy that is a gamified, militaristic panopticon. You know what I don't know if people know what a panopticon is, but it's like a prison in which the guards can look through the windows and the prisoner is always being observed. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have an economy that's a panopticon, but there's not going to be people in glass prisons. What's going to happen is they're going to use the 5G signals to surveil us inside and outside our homes. So your cell phone already has the capacity, it already has the app to tell when you've had sex. It can tell when the woman's ovulating before she ovulates. It can tell what moods you're in. They've gone way further than we realize in being able to measure our biometrics. Now, why would they want to do that? Well, of course, they're going to tell us one thing, but the reality is something else. What they're going to tell us is that the 5G is about fast download speed. They're going to tell us that the vaccine is to prevent us from getting COVID. What they're going to tell us is that we're entering a wonderful new world where we have access to virtual reality headsets and entertainment. But what's really going to happen is we're going to be moved into the casino economy. Now, imagine the best way for me to explain a casino economy is this. I'm not going to assume everyone's been in a casino, but we've at least seen them in movies. And does that sound telling us that
we're
going to?
That sound is telling us we're wrapping up, but you're leaving us with the casino economy. Which sounds like a few people win, a lot of people lose. So say one last thing and we'll have you on again.
Okay, everyone needs to research the Internet of Bodies and the Internet of Things and realize that we're being set up to be enslaved in a neo-feudal system of digital serfdom. That's the best I can say.
Wow, that's going to have a whole new dimension, the surfing the net, huh? We'll have to net some surfs too. I'm so happy that we've had this conversation.